to the 4Jack Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is season 5 of the 4Jack Podcast, and what an evolution this show has undergone. From the team, our sponsors, to our guests, wow. A massive thank you to everyone that has contributed and continues to support and share in our success. Season 5 promises to be our best season yet. We're staying true to our fundamental ethos of utilizing the platform to share the untold stories, amazing achievements of how golf truly impacts, connects, and is celebrated by many. As we rapidly approach the end of 2022, we would like to wish everyone a safe and joyous holidays. And before we get into it with tonight's special guest, let's head down south to check in with the director. D-Lane, what's happening in SoCal today?
Well, it's nice because it's seasonal. One of the very rare days in Southern California where when we have weather talk to kick off the pod, where it's not 72 and sunny, right? A little mist today, a little winter sky, kind of a distant sun, kind of setting the scene of a book I want to write about how it doesn't have to be perfect all the time, so members stay away. But that being said, it is what it is, right? 321 days of playable days at our club, so another good day today. A little rain the last couple of days, so LA's in beautiful form. It's winter, it's the holidays soon, and it's really goddamn nice to be in season 5, right? It's been a couple of months. You've got a beard, or what kind of looks like a beard.
An attempt.
But the hair still looks good, so it doesn't matter. If the hair is good, everybody else is happy. And that being said, it's really good to see you. It's good to see our guest on the bottom of the three screens. And it's just nice to be back and full of shit and talking about things that we might know a little bit about.
Yeah, I like it. You're very romantic about the LA weather and the climate currently. So that's fun. Well, without further ado, the 4Jack Podcast is extremely excited to have a very special guest on this evening. A man that truly has golf woven into every fabric of who he is. From humble beginnings as a looper and mini tour player to now what's starting to show potential of a very long and decorated career on the sports media side of things. Father, husband, mega golf guy, hat aficionado, and author. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Shane Bacon.
Nicest intro I've ever had on a podcast, even my own. It was very nice. And I think it's worth saying that I did change hats before we started the podcast once I knew where Chris was living right now.
Yeah, I like that. Vancouver Canucks showing a little patriotism for the boys up here. That's real nice. And I got to say, this was our first read in with the new read. So no real fumbles. I'm pretty impressed with
that. Nice. Nailed it.
Yeah, I got to say, first and foremost, I got to share our condolences for you because myself growing up in Canada on the prairies, Derek being from Minnesota, the adopted brethren, we completely understand the heartbreak of the golf season coming to the end. And via social media, we've seen the griddle is now closed for the season.
Yeah, yeah. The putting green is rock right now. I actually was texting the guy that helped put in one of those backyard putting greens. We named it the griddle. Obviously, my last name being Bacon. That was a Kate creation with Grunt Under Repair, the logo company we do. And she made a sweet logo and made the flags out of it and everything like that. But like, it's artificial. And you're chipping right now and you're hearing the thud. I mean, there's no check or anything right now. Like that ground is frozen. And now I'm starting to understand more and more about the Northeast golf courses and why they might shut down for the whole year, you know?
I was going to say, like, has the thought ever crossed your mind, man, what the hell am I doing here? Being an Arizona guy, you got to be second guessing your decisions right now.
Well, I mean, you know, what's kind of funny is I've really embraced the winter golf scene. So like I played last Sunday with the group. I asked the question on social media a few weeks ago about like, what's your temperature cutoff for golf? And it was interesting how low some of the numbers would be. But, you know, I mean, if it's sunny and not windy, it kind of doesn't matter what the temperature is, you know, if you can get out there and actually play and there's not snow on the ground. And so I've kind of embraced it. I mean, I've got a good group that's passionate out here already and, you know, they want to walk. And, you know, we'll bundle up and there's a couple courses that you can kind of just stumble upon and play and nobody really ask any questions. So if it's relatively nice, you know, we're trying to sneak in. And I mean, I played a decent amount of golf last December and January.
Well, Shane, even further is as you start to get into this and embrace it, then you're going to take it to the next level. And it's like, did I wear shorts?
This is
when I played when it's
Derek, cold? This was one of my first introductions. I played a place, you know, I moved here early 21. And I play this golf course named Lyman Orchard with an old instructor buddy of mine out of Hartford. And we roll up. And I mean, I have I think I had three layers on the bottom and four up top. And I have like one of those heated hand pouches. Like I was prepared. I mean, I was like, if you dug into like a tour pros tour bag, you know, like I had a whole bunch of shit on my bag and this dude's walking up the last hole in shorts. And I'm like, I'm flabbergasted. So I have to ask my buddy and he goes, it's kind of like a tough guy thing. You know, like how tough can you be to wear shorts in this weather?
So Dust, my little brother, who's also a great player, we have this thing is like, not only do we go winter golf, so we've played every month growing up in Minnesota, at the exception of January. It's the only month we have not been. But then the next contest was, is who, now I have played shorts in 11 months of the year playing golf, as is he, but he did it faster. So it's like, you get into this thing and both of us loathe pants. Like I live in Southern California.
You live in shorts.
Only work and a funeral am I putting pants on. But that being said, like that's like, and pretty soon it's like, do you have a toque on? Or
yeah,
hey, did you have sleeves? So it becomes like the lineman in a football game, right? Who can be the most undressed? Then you are officially part of that brethren, of which it's like people just think you're the dumbest human being.
I'm fine being a weenie and being warm. Let me just say that. I do care. I do not care if you want to call me names. I'm going to be layered up. I did find I think that's Bonobos has these like pants with the inner flannel. So then it doesn't look like you're wearing two layers, even though you kind of are. So that's like a sneaky way to not look nearly as wimpy with your, you know, your bolt, like your ski pant looking, you know, situation going on downstairs.
And sneaky link, LL Bean has a five pocket.
So just free ads, just firing off free ads right here.
100%. Listen, we're looking for dough. So I'm going to drop every company I know that's not the word people that used to be with us.
I love it. I love it. That's great, Derek. You're doing a fantastic job this evening. That's awesome. You guys have no idea what it gets to in Manitoba when you get a car cover, you get a propane heater, you get a bottle of something alcohol, hard alcohol. We're talking like jet fuel. Yeah, that's it gets a little chaotic at that point.
Yeah, see, that's rookie move, though. If you want to stay warm, you walk. Anybody in a car is just asking. Yeah, totally. Those are the people in the snowmobile suits.
Yeah, I agree totally. Derek, you kind of alluded to it earlier. You wanted to write a book. We got the man on the show. This is new for you, Shane. This is kind of a new adventure for you. So tell us about the inspiration of the book and kind of how this all came to be.
Yeah, I wrote a children's golf book. I would not have guessed that my first book would have been a children's book about golf, but you know, here we are. I'd say the inspiration was, you know, I have a 3.5-year-old son and a 9-month-old daughter. When I had Henry, my son, I you know, you guys know, I mean, we're golf people, you get golf stuff, like people send you golf crap. I mean, that's what we do. No laying up's thread on Christmas Day is point, you know, point front. Yeah, look at the back of mine. I mean, we have golf stuff everywhere. Like we're golf nerds through and through. And I was surprised that there weren't more children's golf books. You know, I got a couple, but I was a little bit shocked that there weren't more. And then when I started to do a little digging, that was when I realized that there weren't a ton of them. And I thought about it for a while and got a little bit of inspiration from my buddy Joel Klatt, who does college football. He told me the way he kind of plays golf with his sons. When I was asking him for some tips with Henry, he said, you know, we go out and we'll play a hole of golf and then we'll do whatever they want to do. So if it's riding the cart and not swing it, if it's go throw rocks, or if it's go to look at the turtles. But every story you tell, he kept mentioning animals. And then it was just like, it just kind of, you know, you put two and two together. I'm like, wow, you know, like this golf course thing really is a zoo, you know? And so that was kind of the idea from it, is basically my son and my buddy Joel, you know, give me some tips on golfing fatherhood, especially early into it. And then from there, you know, teamed up with a good group. And, you know, I mean, you guys know how it is, but it's so wild when you have an idea for something, you know, whether it be you're going to move somewhere crazy or you're going to go on a vacation or you're going to, you know, you're going to cut your hair in a certain way. Like it seems so daunting and then you do it and you're like so pumped that you went through the experience and you're so proud of the experience. And this was definitely one of those because, you know, this is one of the first things. I mean, you can do a telecast or do a podcast or do any of this stuff. And like, you get feedback from people that experience it, but to like see pictures of dads and moms reading the book to their kids has been very, very cool. And that's been a real special part of doing this whole experience.
10 years ago, would Shane Bacon have said, yeah, I'm going to write a children's book and believed it?
I mean, 10 years ago, definitely would have had a long conversation about, are you going to have children? Is this going to be a thing in your life? No, I definitely don't think so. But like I said, you know, you take something from idea or concept and you start to roll through the whole process. And like, to actually see a finalized product and to like work with an illustrator that's bomb and like knows exactly what he's doing. And like, you know, to deal with this, you know, smaller publishing company that ends up being, you know, total like rock through the whole process. It's like, you guys know, like through these journeys, you meet so many incredible people, even if you're bumping into them for a minute or for, you know, a year, you know, like through this whole process, it's been cool. And, you know, you gain respect for the whole publishing world even more. You know, I'm like, wait, people publish books and like a million people buy them right away? I mean, what is that experience must be like? So first book has been a great success, no matter, you know, how many people buy it.
Second installment, third installment, or
what's funny is we've talked about fiddling around with the idea, actually. So we'll see. There's some adaptation to what we're currently doing that I think we might really pursue, and there's some opportunity there, but I think there's an opportunity for some more in this space. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I don't want to do it just to do it, but if I think it'll be cool and interesting and fun and, you know, a project that would open eyeballs to other people's interest, then probably see myself doing it.
I think at any capacity, growing the game from all kinds of perspectives is awesome. So what a huge accomplishment. But you've always been a writer. That's always kind of been a passion of yours. So did you find you could draw on previous experiences, or was just like a whole new thing for you?
Yeah, kind of new, because you know, it's like cadence and rhyming and, you know, and length of sentence, stuff you never really think about if you're writing 1800 words about Rory, right? It's like a different process, and this is, you know, when you think about the stuff you've written, this is easily the least amount of words I've ever put into, you know, something I would consider a big project of mine, and this being the biggest, which actually adds stress to it, right? Because then all of a sudden you got to make sure everything's really perfect. I remember our last edit, like sending this thing to the publisher, here we go, you know, you can't make a single change. I changed two parts of two graphs, you know, and it's like last send out, but you know how it is. Like you're looking at it again, you're like, there's one word that might be better here. So it was wild. I actually had an English class in college. I went to college in Arizona. I think I'm wearing a Wildcat shirt right now. And I had a class. It was like the hardest but most fulfilling class I had in college, and it was every paper had to be one page double spaced, but it was like a pretty challenging English course. So you know, you get comfortable about writing, and you feel like you'd write, you know, 10 pages about this subject, but it was harder to make it one page because you really had to get all the important stuff in there. And this felt a little like that. Like it brought me back a little bit to those collegiate roots of trying to, you know, get a decent grade in English class.
What about dumbing down the vocabulary for a children's book? Did you struggle with that at all? Was it like, oh man, I got to sub this word out, people aren't going to know what I'm talking about?
You know,
about.
It was a little bit more like golf vernacular. It was the thing I had to kind of watch, because you do have to, like, I wanted to make sure there were a couple of golf jokes in there for parents, you know, which I had tried to include, was a couple of digs at the parents and, you know, their inabilities on the golf course, you know, not a little bit like, you know, the Pixar fold where there's like all those kind of adult jokes that you pick up on, no kid's ever going to understand them. So I wanted to get a couple of, you know, those types of Easter eggs in there. But yeah, I think it was more the golf talk, like to make sure that it wasn't words that we three talk about all the time. It was stuff that is just kind of loosely talking about the game. So you look at the page and you understand maybe what the hole is or the ball or the swing or the flag stick, like those things kids might be able to understand a little bit better.
Totally. Yeah. Derek, where do you want to go with this? I mean, there's a million sort of avenues I want to take Shane down, but anything you want to start with?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I was kind of writing notes today, and one of the things that I'm interested in, and just because kind of where we're at. So like being a director of golf and then potting, you have one thing where I can say whatever they want, and you got the other part where I can barely say anything I want. I just agree. So when you talk about
like
Parksy is talking,
yes,
a great way to put it.
Like you're talking about Parksy, and he's like, okay, you're writing, but one of the other things is you speak a lot. Obviously, you are in front of people, you've got a huge voice, it's a presence in that side of it. And I always think about this, and kind of my catalyst was growing up with Dan Patrick. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of call-in shows, but the questions he asks are still the best questions I ever hear in sports, right? Then on the other front, I've got Colin Cowherd, who's kind of the opposite, doesn't take any call-ins, everything's research and kind of grinding out with the staff and kind of factoids dropping here and here, a little bit more USA Today. Is there a format that of all the things you've done, you've fallen in love with the most? Like, is it the free form potting? Do you feel like being in front of a camera? Do you feel like putting it into prose and writing and kind of doing all of the things you want to say in script? like, where do you like to really meander to if you want to get your point across?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I know that's kind of a generic thing to say on podcasts, but I mean, it's a great way to look at it, because there are, you know, you do kind of speak and talk, you know, you do it in life, right? I mean, the way I speak to my kids is not the way I speak to my friends, you know, on the phone. But you know, when you're doing live golf versus studio show versus podcast, you know, you understand what you can and can't say in that space. I don't really know when you learn that either. That's kind of a weird thing. Like, you just know, like, if, and I like to be kind of weird on broadcast. Like, I like to go a little off script, but also understanding, like, all right, let's reel it back in and get back to what's going on. I would say, you know, my favorite space to live is live golf. I mean, I really, really like doing live golf and calling it. You know, I like kind of lengthy shows. You know, if you're going to give us 4 or 5 hours and there's not much commercial breaks and, you know, you're with a good crew and a good analyst, like, let's just rock and see where we go and have a little bit of fun doing it. So I would say that's probably the place I find myself the most comfortable. And the interesting part about that too is I think I learned a little bit in studio that, you know, I'm more comfortable maybe not being on camera as much versus being on camera. And when you're doing live golf, you're not nearly on camera as much. You know, you're a little bit more behind the scenes and a little bit more soundtracky. And so I think that was a little thing I noticed that was a little more interesting to me, was just simply you're kind of voicing what people are watching in front of you. And it's not me having to be on camera kind of telling you, you know, what I think or you know, the point I'm trying to make. I think it's a little easier for me, a little more comfortable for me in that space.
So in that live space, then how often are you capped, or how often, like, if you have a comment, do you have to like push the button for approval to jump in with your level? Do you get to say what you want? And then if hopefully it doesn't get, you know, beeped through, or like, that's the thing. So like, friend of the show, Dontrell Willis, when Train's on, Train's great in the space of improvising, right? Or doing a skit or making other people laugh. And then other friend of the show, Kevin Burkhart's the opposite, right? He's the studio host. He's the new Joe Buck. Even though behind the scenes, you know, he's run through everything with everybody so that he and Greg look the same way. But like, one of the great things is guys like you who are hybrids, you get to play all of those things, right? So like, when you're on live television, is there ever a point where you're muffled or you can't say something, or do you have carte blanche just to kind of go as you staccato, just boom, say as
you, you know, I've never really worked in a space where they told you not to say stuff. I think that's a slight misconception about TV in general, is like, I mean, I think you understand where you can go depending on where you're at, right? You know, I mean, I think that, you know, when I'm on Golf Channel on Golf Today, and you know, we're getting into a live discussion, I think that you all understand who you're working for and who they're friends with, right? And so in that world, you might understand, I'm not going to go take some pro live stance really deeply simply because that's not my place to go. You know, I mean, there are people out here that can go down that road if they feel comfortable to go down that road. It's just not a place, A, I'm comfortable going down because it's not something I believe. And B, I also understand that it's probably not the right thing to say in this space. You know, I mean, you're not going to be on Fox saying you hate the World Cup. You know, I mean, the World Cup is something they've spent a ton of money to have on TV. And so I think you understand and start to learn what you can say, what show you're on. I'll give you an example of this. One of my first shows I ever worked for Fox was a US amateur. Joe got sick, and I was driving across the country back to Arizona in my then girlfriend, now wife's Kia. And my boss called me. He's like, "Hey, we need you in Chicago." And I'd never done live golf before. Like, you're calling, I think it was Wednesday, Thursday of the US amateur. You know, and I'm like, holy shit. Okay, cool. Okay. Like, next flight, let's go. I'm excited. And I was petrified. You know, the moment you're sitting in a seat and the tie's on and makeup's done with you, and you know, you're sitting next to Paul Azinger and Brad Faxon, and you're like, holy crap, here we go. And Zinger made a comment early in the show. Remember, this is Wednesday, this is around the 64. You know, we're bouncing match to match, it's pretty wild. And Zinger made a comment. We went to commercial and he looked at me and he goes, "Bacon." You know how Zinger can do it. He goes, "Bacon, that's a Wednesday comment right there. I'd never say that on Saturday." You know, and he was being funny and he was being light. But at the same time, I right away went, you know what? That's right. Like, he can have a little bit more fun on a Wednesday than he can have on a Saturday and Sunday when we're getting close to crowning like one of the great champions in our game, right? A US amateur champion year to year. And so I think you just, I think you understand the space you're in and you understand what you can and can't say. And I think from there, the freedom begins. And I think that's a big part of the job is nobody's saying, don't say this. I think they're just, I think they have trust in you that you maybe know what road might not be worth going down.
Yeah. Some maturity, some awareness definitely plays a key role in that. I would assume they don't expect you to go sideways and have to pull you off air, but.
Well, and one of the reasons I was talking about is because obviously a colleague and one of the things we have a lot of talk about is Brando, right? And so now the absurd and the ludicrous is now norm and you just push buttons to a side, much like you were saying. So I'm in this mode of where I'm thinking about things of like, you know, how I'm kind of trying to quantify just what it is going on behind that. And it's, when somebody has knowledge as a writer and somebody who's written word and somebody who speaks about it and has access to golf professionals. And I think we could all say it's like Colt, you know, Parksy, we talk a lot about it. We love the dynamic and the honesty of Colt. And sometimes he's beholden to the person he's interviewed, right? So some of these guys won't let him ask some of the questions that you and I could get away with, and some guys will. And, you know, obviously we know on this show that I'm the biggest Max fan in the world. And I think everybody should have a voice and a feel and a color that way, because it makes what I do fun. Because as a golf professional, I don't like most golf professionals. I don't like blue blazer stuffy. And that's not where I want to take the game, right? I'm on a podcast and I love shorts and, you know, I have a beard at work, and it's like, that's why I love where I work, because I'm allowed to be me. And yeah, you know, I think you take guys like Shane or Colt and guys, these guys that do it in a different way. I think it's refreshing that it's not the same stoic, unbelievably accepted nature. And while I have nothing against Jim Nance, you know, I just, you know, I loved McCord and Faraday and these guys that move the needle in ways that we couldn't. And, you know, Dottie does a great job, but she's just the opposite of that. And so for me, it's just kind of fun to watch Shane have all of these avenues or guys like that in the way that golf's coming up between Colt and other people. Like, I'm glad voices are going in different ways, and they don't necessarily have to embrace that whatever that movement woke is, but they get to kind of be different, right? They get to be somebody else.
I was waiting for that. I gotta put a woke button on the board, I think. Woke golf.
Well, I see Shane laughing, but it's like there's that line, right? Like, there's ludicrous and then there's kind of this shit. It's like, I love that people are kind of in that new space of kind of saying what they want when they
want.
It's
a changing of the guard though, Shane. Would you not agree? Like, I mean, I think it has to evolve at some capacity. I think what they're doing now, especially with you on board, I mean, that's a nice sort of lead into where it could be and where the potential is.
Well, I mean, I think everything in generalities evolve. And I mean, I think when you look at the structure of golf TV, I mean, think about, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that you didn't get the front nine at Augusta National, you know, I mean, how wild to think about that. And now think about how much, you know, how much exposure we can get in terms of watching Masters Week from Thursday morning on through Sunday. Right. And I mean, you think about the evolution of what we were seeing in terms of other golf tournaments and PGA Tour Live and the experiences there and how many new voices are brought in. And I mean, you know, you think about guys like Colt and Smiley. I mean, these are relatively fresh off the fairway dudes that can speak of the game and can talk about these players. And it's refreshing to see those types of players out there. And I mean, you know, you've got like Kira Kay, who I think has just taken an enormous leap in, you know, a year and a half of doing TV, from never doing it to being as comfortable as anybody I see in television week to week and asking the right questions and, you know, being obsessed with golf. Because when you kind of think about it at the end of the day, like, that's what you want in terms of someone you're watching, is you want them to love the stuff you're watching and the stuff you love as much as you do, which is hard because a lot of us are obsessed with golf or football or fantasy or whatever the thing may be. And sometimes it's hard to be that obsessed. I mean, you talk about Burkhardt, who, you know, is one of the best out there at his job. Like, there's no chance that Burkhardt can be as invested in fantasy football as some of us are week to week, because the guy's got to study football for 5 hours a day, you know? And I mean, I know he does. I mean, it's just, and I think when you see the people out there that seem to love it and love what they do, it's an easy sell, you know? And I mean, you know, I know, Derek, you mentioned Nance. I mean, Nance is a guy that freaking loves golf, you know, like, he's obsessed with golf and he wants to play golf and talk about golf. And if he's not on air talking about golf, then it's in his peripheral, you know? And so, I mean, that is the thing that I find so fascinating about this sport, is it is the most unique sport out there because we all are obsessed with it for different reasons versus being a hockey fan and you're obsessed with it because your team is good or your team is bad or your team has potential. I mean, there's not much firsthand experience once you get to the graying beard ages. You know, I mean, once we hit 30, it's like, you know what? I'm not playing pickup hoops anymore. Like, I don't want to blow out a knee because my surgeon isn't as good as the Phoenix Suns surgeon. You know, I'm going to the doctor down the street who's going to be like, yo, dude, crutches for like a year. You know, I mean, that's how that goes.
Can't send emails with a broken wrist. So that's sort
very
of
hard to do.
Puts a cap on revenue generation. Yeah, for sure. I got to say, at any capacity, you're so involved in so many different facets of this. What sort of gravitated you towards podcasting?
You know, I mean, I tried to stay relatively ahead of this stuff. So, I mean, you know, I was pretty early into the blogging stuff. I was in college when I first kind of read about Deadspin and got tipped off to that. I mean, that was back in like the Bill Simmons days of refreshing page 2 during English class, hoping that the new column had dropped, like pre-RSS feed days. And then I was actually covering the basketball team in Arizona, and a guy walked by and was like, oh, if you like Simmons, you're gonna like Deadspin. And kind of from there, I mean, it's like, yeah, well, I need to start a golf blog. So, I mean, you know, I've tried to stay relatively ahead of the stuff. So I was looking the other day, I mean, I started the Clubhouse in 2016, like early 2016 was our first episode with my dad, which was fun. And I mean, I did it in like the Fox Sports studios in LA, you know, like I no idea what I was doing, no idea how it published. But I'd seen some other people doing this, and I started to kind of get a grasp of this potentially being a medium that people are interested in. And then the Clubhouse, I mean, I was actually writing up the other day guests that I had on the Clubhouse, like, cause this was back when you could get anybody, cause nobody knew what the hell was a podcast, and none of these players had their own or had their affiliation with one. You know, I mean, like we got Ricky and Brooks and Bryson and Rory and JT, like in the early days, man, those guys would come rolling through. I mean, it was so much fun. And then, you know, to get the opportunity to get a grip with Max the way we did it for a year and a half. I mean, I bugged him for a while about, you know, the potential of it being pretty sweet. And I mean, I remember covering the first Waste Man. Like I was out there the whole week with Max when he played the first Waste Management that we were going to do the first episode that Sunday night. And he's going to like miss the cut. He's got like 5 holes to play and he's going to miss the cut. And I've walked like 31 holes with the guy. I'm like, well, this is going to be a weird podcast. Like what the hell are we going to talk about? And then he goes like birdie 14, birdies 15. I think he didn't birdie 16 and went birdie on 17, birdie on 18. And he's like 32nd, you know, and you're like, sweet. And then he shoots like 65 on Saturday. And I'm like, this is going to be a sweet podcast. You know, all of a sudden it went from, well, I guess we could just talk about pro golf. You know, like, I don't know what the hell to ask him if he's missing the cut. And then it's like, I think he finished top 10 that week. And I remember we went back to the house and like, we had the Super Bowl on and some buddies were over and it's like, let's record it. You know, I mean, I the medium is so much fun as you guys see this and have been doing it for a long time. Like, it's such a cool space to be able to talk about what you want to talk about in so many different capacities. And I'm sure you guys run into this a lot where you think about something or you drive by something, you're like, that could be a podcast, you know, like there's, I mean, you're not going to make it, but you're just like, that could be a decent podcast. And I mean, you hear about stupid ideas all the time. So I like the space and wanted to get into it relatively early. And, you know, I was fortunate to kind of jump in.
It's funny, no matter how well we want to script this or how we want to follow a roadmap, it never, ever goes
as it shouldn't, as it shouldn't
go sideways.
Yep.
You see, and that's the best part, right? Because I work in probably one of the most conservative fields in the world. And the guys that do it all have these 3 letters and they're all stoic, again, to use that word. And they don't elaborate and they don't like to rock the boat and this stuff. And it's like one of those things you just said is like the greatest thing about the podcast. It's like we were talking earlier, Parks is going to probably come down for the U.S. Open at LACC and do all these things. And like, I have no interest in going, right? I have no interest living here, fighting Wilshire and doing all the things.
God, you're spoiled.
That live in that corridor.
That's legit.
Spoiled.
I live in the South Bay. I don't even have to touch a freeway if I don't want to.
You
don't
want to hear how bad he has it.
Right? I got 3 piers within 2 miles. Like, I'm not going to watch golf. Plus, Shackelford's head is going to be so big. Like, half the golf course is going to be Jeff Shackelford. And the other half's going to be that he's just going to be pointing over to see how great it is.
It is.
I know, but it's like great. In LA, it's such a different perspective because, like, our big thing would be the Riv, you know, February. Or, like I said, we go to Torrey or we go to San Francisco. We don't do this here, right? And like, that's one of the things like we're potting or the space that you were talking about, Shane. It's like, you can literally go anywhere. Like in a podcast, we can talk about anything. So we sit down, we do this and boom, Shane jumps up, puts on a Canucks hat. It's like all of this stuff flows because we want to take shots at Toronto as often as we can. It's my favorite thing in the world. And it's not the center of the universe anymore, Parksy. It's just not. No, I mean, it might be on a very few occasions where he has a comment and he comes in as a guest, but like, it's fun to attack the USGA sometimes. Like, we had Bob Kane on, Shane. I don't know if you, if there, but Chris asked this question about the USGA, the US Open setup, and Bob Kane spent 15 minutes just, I don't think Parksy had skin when he was done.
No, he tore me hard.
Rant. And it's like, so like when you guys were doing that with Get a Grip and you're doing all these things, tell me about some of the guests and some of the movement that you had that just made you sit back in your chair going, holy shit, I'm interviewing these people and they're talking about
this. Well, you know, I mean, the moment for me was I had Rory on the podcast. I'd been messaging Rory to come on and he was injured. I mean, this must've been like 2017 probably. And I was like, when are we going to see you again? You know, just, a complete throwaway question. Like, nobody cares. I mean, you know, he's probably not going to give me an answer. And he answered. He's like, oh, actually, you know, we just figured out I'm going to return it, whatever. And the bottom ticker of ESPN that day was like, Rory McIlroy set to return at Doral via the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon podcast. And I was like, holy hell, here we go. You know, like, I mean, it's so funny, though, that those moments, you know, they matter so much because it's a little bit like the – you know, there's that like nobody cares about your score thing. I think it's a G4 thing. And I think it's brilliant, right? Because it's so true. But like you care about your score and that is important. And I can come home and tell my wife the golf story that every wife hates, you know, that everybody that doesn't play golf doesn't want to hear. Yet I'm passionate about it. So somewhere in that goofy ass golf story, she's seen and feeling that golf passion that exists inside of me. And it's the same thing about this. It's like nobody cares that it was the bottom line, that my podcast is on the bottom line. But like for me, it was one of those moments where you're like, this is amazing. Like, this isn't nothing. It might be something. It might be something very small, but it's not nothing, you know? And I mean, I think men especially, we want to act like we have it figured out and that we don't need people to tell us how great we are. But it is so nice to see something that at least makes you feel acknowledged at times. And that was one of those moments where I was like, this is pretty cool. You know, like I'll probably never have that happen again. So, you know, let me take a little video scroll of it that I'm sure is still somewhere on my phone and let that live in my world for a little bit.
The source, Shane Bacon. I love it.
Not many sources in my career. So that was one of the rare moments. There you go. That's not the world I'm trying to exist in, is sources.
All right. We're going to time travel. Shane, you got to take us all the way back. Way back to your childhood, to your first introduction.
This is hour two.
Yeah, exactly right. We want to dive deep into your mental state of a child, and talk about who was instrumental in the introduction to the game and sort of how that progression fell.
My dad was a big golfer. He played a ton of golf. He actually kind of quit playing when I was growing up to like just be around with us more. And I got really into baseball and some other sports and stuff. And so. He played less and less. And then I got to, you know, turn 12, 13 and started to want to go out and play, you know, go out and play with him and go out and swing him a little bit. And so that was when I first kind of found the bug and the love for golf. So I'd say my dad was a big part of it. His brother, my uncle, Doug, you know, was a big part of it for me. I went to college in Arizona. I didn't know anybody, like literally didn't know any human that was in Tucson, Arizona. And my uncle lived in Phoenix. I'm 18, going from a town of 24,000 to Tucson. I mean, I thought I was in New York City. Like, it was amazing, right? And but my uncle lived in Phoenix, so if I needed to get away, I could go stay with him, you know, an hour and a half away. And like, he got me in like the men's club at his municipal golf course even when I was in college. He knew I wasn't going to play a ton. You know, he'd be the guy that would occasionally like buy me random golf stuff, or you know, get me grips, or set me up with this person or that. I met a lot of friends in golf through my uncle, so I'd say he was extremely instrumental in that. You know, and then, I mean, I think it's funny to say it now, but like, you know, like in my adulthood, like the No Laying Up guys, I mean, I think just knowing them relatively early in their careers and to kind of see the passion and their ability to execute this amazing stuff on a relatively routine basis, I would say those guys are pretty inspirational for me as an adult. I would say the same of like Andy Johnson and the whole Fried Egg crew. I mean, like the Shotgun Start pod. And then, you know, I've got this dorky little tour sauce chat that's like we probably had for like 8 years. And like, you know, it's like, you know, like me and a couple guys, like it's like some of the golf media guys that like we read and listen to are in it. And a lot of those guys have become good friends of mine. And like, they're the people that, you know, I really look up to, like Kyle Porter and Porath and, you know, Kevin Van Valkenburg and like that group of guys that, you know, keep me kind of going when, you know, you don't love golf. I mean, we all run into it, Derek. I can only imagine, you know, in your profession, you have days where you walk away and you're like, you know what? I don't ever want to see a golf course again. I don't ever want to return. Like, I remember when I was playing mini tour golf, I worked at a golf course in Scottsdale, and on my day off, like, do I want to drive back to work and hit balls here? Like, that sounds so brutal. And you'd have to like find some inner push to get you there, or you just didn't practice that day. And then, you know, obviously there are people that you show up the next day and you see this member or you see this person you work with and you're like, oh, this is why I do this stuff.
Let's go. Let's get out there. I like that. So talk to us about the competitive sort of passion that was burning. You find this golf game, you start, you know, competing a little bit, and then all of a sudden you're like, man, I want to take this to the next level. Let's get out there. Let's try some mini tours.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody that didn't make it, it's like, you kind of look back on it, like, what the hell was I thinking, you know? But at the time, yeah. I mean, you know, we've all been through that. And it's like, at the time you're like, no, I've got the game, man. I can do it. There was a guy, a buddy of mine, he actually works at Stanwich here now. His name's Austin Ball. He's a great dude. I was playing golf with him in Scottsdale when I was working at True North. And, I always thought I was inferior to the other guys that had the itch to maybe play pro in some capacity. One of them is now one of my best friends. His name's Ashton Woods. And, they played a tiny mini tour golf, before he had to give up the dream. And then my buddy Eric Bailey, who was sick player as well. And I worked with them, and I always thought I was less than those guys. And I remember Austin Ball one day, I played great. And he's like, you know, you're the best one out here of these guys. You know, you're the best one. I'm like, oh, what the hell is this guy talking about? Right. And I swear it's like a little bit of Austin Ball was the reason I did it, you know, but I mean, I was playing good, right? And trying to, you know, I wanted to give it a run, and I'm glad I did it. But dude, I mean, as you know, it is a different world, and I'm not totally sure it's still to this day been properly documented, like true mini tour golf week to week, you know.
There's some pretty amazing players. I mean, I spent 5 seasons down in the desert when I was trying to play.
Were you in Palm Springs or Arizona?
Yeah, Palm Desert. I was actually, this is where me and Derek met years ago at the Quarry. So I was at the Quarry for a little while, done another couple of clubs, bounced around, had a regular member sort of bag and traveled a little bit. But yeah, man, there are so many guys out there, especially caddies, that are like, never heard of these guys, and they have these weird ass names. Fairway Dave stands out. You remember him, Derek?
Yeah.
And this guy was, I swear he was schizophrenic, and he had clubs from 1941, and he was an alcoholic, and he just always had a butt going. But man, this guy never missed a fairway, and he would shoot 64 on the regular. But you put him in a competition, blow his brains out.
Well, I mean, I've what now, 27 years doing this, one caddy has ever made a Prusukin. And I had some of the best players in the desert, obviously, in the Quarry for 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
So they were all successful. And I always said the same thing. If you can't go to the Norman course and break 70 3 straight days, there's no reason I'm going to give you any days off. And one of the things that I found was,
nice guy.
I said the same thing. I'll see you the Monday after Q school, because I know what's going to happen. I've seen the life, but these guys with money throw money at you. There might be a car involved. Hey, you're one of the best players I've ever known. And then, like you said, one guy says that, why not? Right. It prolongs college. It prolongs ski season, whatever you want to say. I'm not here to take care of it, but I got to take care of the members. So after you shoot 74, the first round of the Norman, just come back and just take care of my members. I'm good with it, but I'm going to give you that day to go prove
I came back to work.
Not what you think that you are.
Shane, you had the Looper experience. Why don't you tell us a little bit?
Well, hold on. Great, Chris. I want to ask you this. What was the moment for you when you were like, all right, like I'm not doing this anymore? Was it like a Q school failure? Did you have a tournament? Like, it's been 5 years. Did you set a date? Like, what'd you do in terms of your professional experience when you finally were like, all right, like, what am I going to do now?
Okay. I got two answers for you. One involves a female and her father that said, what are you doing dating a golf pro? He's not going to make any money. That was sort of instrumental. And I was a chef by trade previous to that. Okay. So I was like, all right, now's the time. But literally I went to a Monday qualifier for a web.com event in Modesto, and going up there thinking, yeah, we're all good. Game's in a good place. I remember seeing this kid pull up in a Mercedes, a 500 SL. He pulls up and he's got the tunes going, and he opens his door and this cloud of smoke comes out. I'm like, who's this guy? Like, is this really where we're at? And the Monday Q, this guy ended up winning it. And I think he shot 63 or 62. And I think I was two under or something like that, and thought I played out of my shoes, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Between those two things, I think it's game over. It's time to hang up.
I want to make a shirt. Like, I want to make like a mini tour shirt or do like a club pro guy shirt or something. And like, two under's not that good. You know, like, it is so good. Like, two under's so hard to shoot, you know, for, I mean, in golf, like now, especially in my life, I'm like, if I shoot two under, I am jazzed. You're right. Happy. But
and you're probably making money off the boys.
You know, like when you're playing and you, I mean, my first pro tournament, I've told this story before, but I birdied the last two holes and shot 68. And I mean, like, I was on cloud 100. Like, I mean, I was so pumped. I was so nervous on the first tee, and to write 68 down and you're in like 50th place, you know, like, you know, you're not even sniffing. Like 40 yeah. guys shot 67, you know, and like 20 guys shot 64. And it's like, you know, my good and their good is a slightly different zip code.
Oh yeah. 64 with three bogeys and three putts or something like that. Right. And these guys are walking away pissed off.
And Derek, I think you'll appreciate this, Derek. I played a Pepsi Tour event before, like, I first did the Gateway Tour. My dad came out, mentioned, you know, inspiration, and my dad, who, you know, he's never going to miss an opportunity to just be very, very blunt. We're on 17T and he looks at me. We're playing foursomes, by the way, mini tour foursomes. And he goes, oh. Hey, Shane, you're the only guy in the group that's made a bogey. I was like, thanks, Dad. Appreciate that. Like, for the day, though. For the day. I'm like, no. I got it. Like, I got it. You didn't have to keep that going. Like, I also was aware of this developing situation.
Yeah.
Parents,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, Pops. Appreciate that. Yeah. Little reality check for you, eh? Humble pie. I got to go back to the looper question. So we know you spent a little time over on the other side of the pond looping at St. Andrews. Like, that must have been a pretty insane experience.
Yeah. Yeah. My buddy Will Fralick, who I went to school with and I lived with for three and a half later years in college. He was a golf fanatic, obsessed with golf. He actually caddied at Estancia in North Scottsdale, which I think is the only top 100 course in the state of Arizona. I mean, it is sensational. I mean, you know, you guys know desert golf, especially Derek. I mean, it takes a lot to make a desert golf course really stand out, and Estancia stands out. And he met this Scottish caddy, and like, we'd sit on a roof in college, Chris, and drink beer, like on the roof of our house, and listen to Texas country music is what we do. I mean, we did this for like 3 years. Like, we were complete idiots. And we'd always talk about caddy. We should go to Scotland and caddy. We should go to Scotland and bartend. We should go to Scott. You know what I'm saying? Like, these dumb drunks in between Robert Earl Keane playing.
Of course.
And it was like senior year. And we were like, yo, we've been talking about this for like 3 years. Are we going to like go to Scotland? And
let's do it.
And we called his buddy Dave. And Dave is like, I'll hook you guys up, you know, with whatever I can. And we flew over. Will landed the day before I landed in St. Andrews. And I was in Texas and he was in Arizona. So he flew like direct. And I, for whatever reason, I was flying the next day. And I show up at this house. Like, again, this was also 06. So I'm pretty sure like it wasn't even smartphone world. I'm certain like we didn't have smartphones. I think we bought like prepaid phones over there. Like, that was the cell phone thing. So like you had like stuff written down on a piece of paper and you went and found whoever you're going to. And I walk in and they were drinking beer and it's like Will and Dave, and I meet a Dave. And I'm like, yo, like, how's it going? And he goes, good, man. I caddied at Kings Barnes today. And I was like, you did, Will? And he's like, yeah, I just went out for a loop at Kings Barnes. I'm like, you've never played Kings Barnes, right? He's like, nope, never seen it either. I was like, this is going to be an interesting summer. So like, that was kind of the start. And we met the guy in charge of the caddies at the old course in St. Andrews Links. He'd come from American Club, liked American caddies, said, you know, American caddies will work, you know, pretty hard for most of the day. And
more.
And so he was relatively fond of us, and you know, we had to get referral cards for like a week, and he was like, all right, you guys seem like you don't know, you're not complete idiots, and then we were off and running.
It's a weird sort of ecosystem of people that show up to caddy. I have met some weird and wonderful people, but it's the great equalizer because you have access to these people, and you spend, especially for me, because I had the privilege of caddying at two super, super high-end clubs regularly. And to have 4 hours on the golf course with some of these people that are, you know, making decisions that can sort of move the needle for the universe, it's pretty insane. But over there, not knowing those golf courses, not knowing that golf, was it a lot to digest?
Yeah. I mean, to say the least, you know, and we're 22, you know, I mean, we're 22 and think we know stuff, and then you learn quickly. You don't. But you know, I mean, I know you guys would probably agree with this. I mean, a lot about caddy and his attitude, and we had good attitudes. And as much as the golfer's looking for somebody to walk with them for 4 hours and tell them all the bumps around the golf course and where to hit it, they're also looking for someone that isn't just telling them what to do or demanding they hit this club, is relatively lighthearted, having a good time, will include the other people in the group. You know, I mean, you guys know how it is. Like, you guys know the difference in a good caddy and a mediocre caddy or a bad caddy. And a lot of it's personality. And so, again, we were 22-year-old kids walking the old course. Are you kidding me? I mean, you couldn't beat the smile off our face with your best 4-iron. And so, you know, we were having the time of our lives. Like, we get paid in cash, right? So we get paid, I think we got 40 pounds a loop, and we typically get like 20 pound tips. So we get 60 pounds, which at the time was about $120. Our rent, we rented one room out at a lady named Ivy's house in St. Andrews. Okay. She was like the sweetest woman ever. It was 45 pounds a week for rent. Okay. So one loop done, that cash, set it aside, rent's paid for. She'd do our laundry, all that. The rest of the money we're making is like food money, beer money. I mean, you know, you're in St. Andrews, for God's sakes. I mean, we're, you know, you, again, like, we couldn't have a bad day.
Get to know the pubs real well, real quick.
We knew the divey ones. We knew the, you know, we knew the touristy ones. We had them pretty dialed.
I like that. Derek, I think I'm going to throw it over to you. We're nearing that magic time slot here where we're going to wrap the show up. Been a real pleasure having you on, Shane. This
appreciate
has been awesome.
It. Yeah, absolutely. Long time coming. I appreciate the patience.
Oh, of course.
Well, for me, this is kind of it's slightly cliche, but, you know, I was thinking this morning, Parks, he asked me as we started season 5, and one of the things he asked me is, okay, what do we want? Where are we going? What's going to be the direction, and what are going to be the guest list? And then what's your, like, who's your go-to? Like, who's the guy you really are, or the person in golf or the female in athletics or anything? Like, what are you looking for to kind of define the moment for season 5? And I thought it was a great question, because for me, I'm just different, right? Like, I like to go away from golf. So when I'm talking to you, like, I like to think about the bigger picture of other things that don't necessarily just always go back to the core of what the game is, even though that's why we're all here. But you have a lot of platforms. You've got a lot of opportunities to get to a lot of people. In 23, what's the story, or who's the person that you really want to chase? Like, what's out there that's going to not only excite you, but it's going to kind of bring out that passion and what it is we do? Like, what do you want to go after? Because, like, for us, like, I'm not done with the Phil thing, right? Like, I beat on Phil all year last year. And as somebody who worked at Rancho Santa Fe and all of this stuff, it's not personal, but it's like, I think sometimes accountability is the one thing we're all looking for, whether it's political or in our social lives or whatever we're doing. Like, you can basically say whatever the hell you want. You don't have to apologize. You can just simply move on to the next comment. I mean, like, the perfect example is, like, in America, Emmanuel Ocho made this big rant about how bad Justin Herbert is, that he's just a social media quarterback, right? Like, he's not really what you think he is. And then the next time, it was this huge story, and he comes on Monday and says, I apologize. It was something I shouldn't have said. I won't say it again. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. And it's like, there's just no accountability. You can say whatever you want, which is the one thing I kind of want to address with Phil in 23. And some of these things coming down, Liv's going to fall out. There's going to be a lot of fun things we'll find out. Norman will always be a villain, yada, yada, yada.
Right here first.
But for me, like, away from Liv, what do you find that's going to move your needle and really bring out what is inside of you about kind of that platform or what you're using?
Yeah, I mean, I totally know where you're going, and I think it's, I've be honest with you, Derek, I've thought a lot about that question over the last probably 5-6 weeks. And I've done a lot of work over the last 5 or 6 weeks to kind of dial in the question that you asked almost to a perfect T. I mean, it's something I've really been thinking a lot about. You know, I think one is, I think there's a part of doing media, like in terms of doing the podcast, where you are so obsessed with the guest and getting the right guest or getting the right person on, that you kind of don't see what's in front of you. I think one of the things I've been trying to do lately with the Get a Grip podcast is have, like, people on that that interest me, that I find interesting in the space, and they're having fun with it. I think one of my goals for 23 is to have a lot of fun with golf media in all capacities. So whatever I'm doing, let's have fun with it. And let's make sure that that's a number one, because if you're having fun, it's going to be more fun to watch. Even if it's the worst thing in the world, it's going to be more fun to watch if the person's having fun than if they're miserable doing it. So I would say the first thing for me is making sure I'm having fun with what I'm doing, and that actually comes through on the podcast or the video screen or the TV or whatever that is. And then the second is, you know, I was interested in the latter part of last season is finding people for the podcast that you don't know about until you listen, but you're going to be interested in by the time you're done listening. So that's a harder project to take on, but it's something I'm relatively passionate about is, you know, I rattled off those names earlier about doing the clubhouse back in 2016 and being able to get Jordan Spieth and Rory and Justin Thomas and Ricky and all these guys, right? I'm not saying no to any of those guys if they want to come on the podcast, but I'm not going to be pursuing that group of people in 23. The people I'm going to be interested in talking about are people that I might not even know exist right now, you know, that I don't know anything about right now. And then the point of the job is to find out via an interview, a podcast, whatever it might be, why they're interesting, why I'm now interested in this person, and why you should be interested in this person as well. Because the pro golf is such a small part of golf, right? It's such a small part of this game, and it's a very important part of this game, but it is small. And I think you have to remind yourself at times that golf is this rare onion in terms of sport, where there's so many layers and so many people out there that are worth talking to and worth having a conversation about, that are approaching the game so much differently than we are.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because we were just talking in a tight group. We call it DMKing. And when obviously David McClay Kidd did Rolling Hills, but we remember Tethro and the Castle course, and he was pissed off and he was going through a divorce, and I'm going to leave my legacy through difficult. These guys were all trying to kind of out difficult each other, right? And then it's like you forget all of the gorse and the stuff that was pulled out of the original band and to make it softer. And I think David kind of did this, and suddenly Rolling Hills pops up and Mammoth and Gamble, and now balls bounce back, right? Golf is becoming fun. You know, you're encouraging, you know, like, who wouldn't want a golf course now that's 666 with kind of a par three and a short and then like one unbelievable, like you want to go walk with your dog and you want to do these things, right? Like brew houses and things are now part of this. You can wear hoodies and you can actually enjoy the game. Like, and I think it's awesome that the perspective that you just explained there to all of the listeners is, it doesn't necessarily have to be khaki pants, white shirts, back tees on Sunday, right? Let's go play golf. Like even the PNC, like I think the best story is that they moved Charlie back, and that's the story. I think that's awesome, right? Like that's what it should be, because that's what's going to bring people in. I mean, obviously Tiger's a different movement, but these guys like JT, these guys laugh. Like the guys are actually enjoying themselves. And it's like, even on the other side of the world, like people seem happy. And it's like, it's very interesting for me where that whole Paul Azinger, to use Zinger again, like let's just grind it out, let's grind it out, let's grind, like that's going away in our sports, and it's becoming fun and it's becoming social and it's becoming all of these things. So I think you said it perfectly, to think about all of the things you don't know that are now popping up. I think they're great stories, and you know, Parksy's really good at finding some of those guys on our podcast, but you know, I will never ever call an influencer. It's never something I'm going to do. That's Parksy's rule. But there's people moving those needles. And you know, like a perfect example, our next pod, we also have Johnny Wonder coming on, and we're going to talk about Callaway. But like Callaway is introducing their new line of Paradigm, and the only thing from Paradigm are people that are being invited to Top Golf are influencers.
Was that a sponsor plug, like, Derek? Is that a sponsor plug?
Hey, listen, we know full well.
It's been like an hour. I figured you had to get a couple brands in before
yeah,
we went away.
Exactly.
I can freely talk about Callaway now, Parksy, for season five. I'm not.
Yeah, for now.
But it is funny that that's where people are going, right? The most conservative person in golf, Chip Brewer, is now letting his marketing team do something. It's going to be influencers, and it's going to be done differently, and people are pushing different buttons. I think that's awesome for us, but more importantly for people on a national platform like Shane. That's got to be truly, truly exciting.
It's exciting. It's daunting, but you know, the thing I feel like the last year has done for me is remind myself that daunting's not bad. You know, I mean, it's a reminder that, I mean, you know, you have children, like we had these children, and it's overwhelming because you're like, what the hell do I do? And then you start to figure it out and you learn, you know, how to parent, or you learn how to change a diaper, and you learn how to, like, you know, now you can take care of two kids and your wife goes away for 3 days. You're like, man, that was overwhelming. But like, I can now I take care of these kids for like a weekend and be good, you know? And then that's like another, you know, we're all Boy Scouts, right? Like we all have the little patches of these little things we've been able to do throughout our lives. And I think daunting doesn't seem as overwhelming to me as it has in the past. And so for me, I'm really excited about 2023 and beyond in terms of doing some stuff that, again, I find fun and entertaining, and hopefully in a way at times, not all the time, but at times, you know, sometimes enlightening. And I think that's kind of what I'm going for next year and beyond. And I'm very, very excited about it.
Love it. Shane, it's been an awesome conversation, getting to know you a little bit, peeling the layers, as we would say. Thanks so much for making time for us tonight. Finally, we landed you. We nailed the date. We nailed the time.
God, I'm so, by the way, let me just tell everybody, last week, I mean, I had it in my phone. I'm the worst phone calendar person on the planet, and I've tried to add alert to everything, and it was in my phone, and I didn't see it, and I felt effing awful, and I'm so sorry, and I hated to waste you guys' time, so I'm glad we got it on the books this week. So truly, sincere apologies. That was my bad, and I'm sorry.
Accepted, but you'll never top Sean Pronger ditching us for a hot tub party in Palm Springs. So no matter what, you won't be the top of the hit list, I promise.
And then came on Shane and pushed whiskey. So it was
awesome. His own brand or what?
He and Chris, him and his brother now are doing whiskey. Chris. So from a hot tub party where they were the sponsors, forgot about it to, hey, let's push whiskey. On
there you go. Podcast. There you go.
Also, Shane, before we go, any platforms you want to shout out, anything where people should obviously we want to send
You can listen to the Get a Grip podcast. It's available wherever you dig around that world, the Golfer Zoo. You can go to back9press.com and buy that. It's available in Canada as well. And I think it's going to be on Amazon. If it's not on it this week, I think next week and beyond. So you can get that internationally as well. And I appreciate you buying it. If you buy the book, DM me a picture if you're reading it to your kiddo. They make me happy. Even if it's a personal DM and it's not meant for me to share publicly, that's fine. I just, it brings a smile on my face. And again, it's a big reason why I did the project. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of that for now. And yeah, I'm looking forward to 23. I'm going to play, by the way, I'm going west in a couple of days to play a little golf in a little warmer climate. So very fired up about that, Derek. I know you're potentially headed to the desert as well.
I am, and obviously anytime you're in LA, anytime you're in this part of the world, we'll take care of
you. I will hit you up on that for sure.
But keep up the voice. We're very proud to have you on, but more importantly, we love people to kind of think like we do, so it's been a great pod. Truly appreciate it.
Chris, Derek, thanks for the time, guys. Really appreciate it.